All right. Good morning. Is that working? All right. Yay, it's working. Despite being a remote worker, I never quite trust my technology at any given point. I often call Alex for IT support, so struggling with the fact that this is actually on a laptop today, so bear with me. I'm going to read the Bible from the Bible, though, because that's who I am. It's very difficult for me to get with the time. So our passage today is in Genesis 28. 10 through 18, if you're following along. Jacob left Beersheba and set out for Haran. And when he reached a certain place, he stopped for the night because the sun had set. Taking one of the stones there, he put it under his head and lay down to sleep. He had a dream in which he saw a stairway resting on the earth with its top reaching to the heaven. And the angels of God were ascending and descending on it. There above it stood the Lord, and he said, I am the Lord, the God of your father, Abraham, and the God of Isaac. I will give you your descendants, you and your descendants, the land on which you are lying. Your descendants will be like the dust of the earth, and you will spread out to the west and to the east, the north and the south. All of the people on earth will be blessed through you and your offspring. I am with you, and I will watch over you wherever you go. I will bring you back to this land. I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you. And when Jacob awoke from this sleep, he thought, surely the Lord is in this place, and I was not aware of it. He was afraid and said, how awesome is this place? There is none other than the house of God. This is the gate of heaven. And early the next morning, Jacob took the stone he had placed under his head, and he set it up as a pillar. He poured oil on top of it, and he called the place Bethel, though the city used to be called Luz. This is the word of the Lord. All right, so Jonathan and Kyle are not here today, as you can see. Jonathan is preaching at a sister church. Kyle is out of town, and so we are going to continue on our covenant series. We have been talking about a lot of the Genesis greatest hits so far. I'm moving around my emotional support water bottles, bear with me. We've been talking about a lot of the sort of first stories we tell our kids, right? We've talked about Adam and Eve, Noah's Ark, Abraham, these stories that we pick to tell our children first because in some ways they're pretty digestible for them. They're easy to explain. But I think that there is often, as adults, a certain danger with that because we can treat these stories that we're hyper-familiar with like morality fables, like the tortoise and the hare, the grasshopper and the ant. There's a clear good guy and a clear bad guy, a clear good choice and a way to sort of navigate through life like these characters. But as we've been following along through Covenant, we have seen that a lot of these guys, especially these patriarchs, are a bit of a mixed bag, okay? And it's interesting that God chooses to so intimately associate himself with them that he, like we talked about last week, will call himself the God of Abraham, Isaac, and now we are to Jacob. And Jacob is especially not the best in terms of morality characters. He's sort of this ancient equivalent of a crypto bro with like a YouTube channel, right, who like sells you this course on how you can beat the stock market, even though nobody else has figured it out. Like, he's figured it out, and he's the first one to tell you about it. Like, this is the character we find in Jacob. If you're unfamiliar with his story, he is very bad to his brother, all right? They do not get along. He tricks his brother out of his birthright. He sneaks his blessing out of his father. So he's not really a great son. He's not a good husband, if you continue on with the story past this point. And he's really not a great dad, okay? This is just how it is. When Jonathan first was like, you're going to do Jacob, I was like, no. Like, I don't like him as a person. But as I've, like, read this journey, I keep thinking more and more about, just the way in which we pattern our life after these stories. If you go into a Christian bookstore, I know there aren't that many of them around anymore, but when I was growing up, there was like a heyday of Christian bookstores. And you go in, and the self-help section is expansive, right? Like, it is most of the store is how to apply these Christian principles to your everyday life to make you a better teenager, a better father, a better mother, a better career person, how to eat better, all of these ways in which we apply the text. And none of them that I've ever seen, and I've spent a lot of time in Christian bookstores, have really encouraged you to live a life like Jacob lives. And yet, for some reason, God is making a covenant with him in this passage. And so Jacob is kind of, where we meet Jacob in the passage is, he is on his journey to find a wife. He needs to get out of town because his brother is very mad at him, like might kill him, mad at him. And so he needs to evacuate, and they decide it's a good time for Jacob to go into the land of his future father-in-law, Laban, and find a wife. So he's on his journey, and he just kicks off at a campsite for the night, right? This is not a destination on his journey. This is just him falling asleep. And the thing about sleep is that it's very vulnerable. He is alone, and it's scary. I am a heavy sleeper. I think I was talking to somebody about this morning. I do not wake up. It is one of the Lord's greatest blessings to me and curses, because I'm always afraid what happens if there's a fire in the middle of the night. Like, I routinely will, like, have to check everything twice, because I know if there is a fire, I will not wake up and respond. Like, you can ask any of my children, and they are very grateful that they have a father who can hear them cry in the middle of the night, because I can't. Like, we would move, when the babies were little, we'd move them on my side of the bed just so I could hear them. And still, sometimes Alex would wake me up, you know, to hear the baby crying. And this is how it goes. When you are asleep, you are vulnerable, and you are surprised, and you are scared, and everything is a lot harder, right? You hear a noise in the night or get a weird phone call. You are caught off guard. And this is what happens to Jacob, who is a very self-reliant, self-made character. All of a sudden, God comes to him in his sleep. And he does the same thing with Abraham two generations before, right? Abraham is asleep, and God passes through the covenant and makes a deal with him while he's completely unconscious. There is this idea that God is initiating this thing with them, not the other way around. And that's a very humbling and humiliating, well, not humiliating, but it's a very humbling thing for a person like Jacob, right? Like, God is the initiator of this covenant, and it is on his character that it rests. We see it with this, depending on what translation you have, this ladder, stair, gate, ramp. There's all kinds of ways people that actually know Hebrew translate this thing that are smarter than me. But the point is, it's this connector between heaven and earth. And as a reminder, at the Tower of Babel, humans were trying to build a connector to the heaven and the earth. They were trying to find their way to God. And it's very Jacob-like in character, what they're trying to do. They're building themselves up, trying to ascend to the heavens. And in this story, we see God has initiated this portal between heaven and an earth. And God gives Jacob the promise that he gives his grandfather Abraham, that he'll be with him, that he will extend this promise through Jacob to all of the land of the earth, that every nation will be blessed. It will go from the east to the west. It's this thing so much bigger than Jacob, and also applies to Jacob specifically, because God says, and on your journey, I will not leave you until I have done this thing. Sorry, I lost my notes there. Unsurprising. But God says he won't leave him until he's done this thing. And yeah, it's so interesting, because Jacob is a self-made man, and all he can focus on is that part in the middle, right? That journey. Because when he responds to God, we didn't read this part, but when he responds to God, he says, I will be in covenant with you. That sounds great if you'll just get me through this journey. It's like he doesn't even acknowledge all of the other things God has said, that God will deliver him, that God will be with him. He just says, okay, I will worship you, and we will make this a house of worship if you can just get me through this journey. And I'm a lot like that, because I never can get too excited about the big far-off plan, right? Like, if we go on vacation, I refuse to get excited until we're in the car. That's just how I do it. Like, because anything could go wrong, right? Like, I am hedging my bets. I am focusing on what's right in front of me. And all of following God is like this for Jacob. Anything could go wrong, right? But he has been given this eternal promise. But the thing that sticks in my head about the promise is that God says, I will not leave you until I've done it. It's not like an if-then contract. It's not if Jacob fulfills his journey, if Jacob gets this right, if he sticks the landing. It's God saying, I will do this thing. I will not leave you until I've done it. And so Jacob makes his way on his journey. That's a whole other thing. He gets wives, he gets livestock, he gets like the whole situation, and God is with him. There's a lot that we don't have time to go into today, but that journey takes him a lot longer than he anticipated. It's at least 14 years. And the next time Jacob remembers this moment at Bethel that we see in the scripture is as he's coming to meet his brother Esau. And as a reminder, things are kind of a mess with Esau, right? And he gets word from his men, his messengers, that Esau now has 400 men, which is a lot of men, right? And Jacob is concerned, to say the least. And he goes into this mode of strategy. We watch a lot of Survivor at our house, and it's like he immediately hits that like Jacob stride of like outwit, outplay, outlast. That's like their slogan if you haven't seen the show. I don't know why you haven't seen the show. It's been a longer than some of you have been alive, but it's, you know, that's the strategy that Jacob goes into. He rearranges all of his men to meet Esau. Even though he's the one that's kind of made a mess of this whole thing, he starts putting people at the front, he starts sending these gifts, he starts getting ready, and he positions himself all the way at the back so that he can run if things get hairy. Like, he is moving himself all the way to the back. He has always kind of got an escape plan, but in the middle of the strategy, there's like a pause in the way the story reads. And I'm going to read it because I want to say it exactly like Jacob says it. Jacob prays, and he says, "O God of my father Abraham, God of my father Isaac, Lord who said to me, 'Go back to the country where your relatives and I will make you prosper.' I am unworthy of this kind of faithfulness you have shown your servant. I have only my staff when I cross the Jordan, but now I have become two camps. Save me from the hand of my brother Esau, for I am afraid he will come back and attack me. Also the mothers of the children. But you have said, I will surely make you prosper and will make your descendants like the sands of the sea, which cannot be counted." He is calling on God's presence in this moment. He is remembering the promise of Bethel. "You said you would not leave me." But this becomes a very dangerous prayer for Jacob. It's like every time we sing, I love our worship team so much, but every time you guys want to sing that song, "I want to be tried by fire, purified," I don't want to sing. I don't like that song because that's a very dangerous thing to tell God. Like, I want your presence so much so that I'm willing to be tried by fire is a scary deal to make with the God of heaven, right? It's something Jacob, in his desperation, is willing to risk, but I think Jacob wants God to co-sign onto his plan, right? Jacob has a plan. He is just asking that God is with him in it. Like, "God, you said you'd get me through. I think I've got my men in order. Like, just, like, as sort of a checkoff of what we're doing, just be with us and let's go," right? And then God blindsides Jacob in the middle of the night with another famous Jacob moment, which is the story where he wrestles with the presence of God. It's not cute wrestling. It's not like when our kids are like playing on the couch and just like the minute one of them gets a little bit hurt, you know, they're out. And it's just tears. It's timeout, tags out, like hugs, conversations, feelings. Like, this is not that kind of wrestling. They last, I think, on average about a minute and a half, like in that wrestling. This, the scripture will tell us, goes to the break of day, right? This is an exhausting sort of wrestling. Even when you see professional wrestling, it's time to like 3 minutes, I think, because you can't wrestle that long. It is the most fatiguing thing like a human body can endure and do. And Jacob wrestles with the presence of God until daybreak. And there's this thing that happens in the middle, but Jacob just won't let go. He's in it. He is in this presence of God that we all know can be difficult and trying and frustrating and exhausting. We've all experienced that if we've walked with the presence of God long enough, right? But Jacob won't let go. And that's probably a whole other sermon I don't have time for today. But essentially, God blesses him. He changes his name to Israel. As we know, Israel is the father of the 12 tribes of Israel, a name that is super famous to this day, right? Because he tells Jacob that he has prevailed. But it doesn't feel like prevailing to Jacob because he names the spot, like the translation that he names the spot is, "My life has been spared," right? Like, it's this humbling thing for a guy like Jacob. He barely makes it out of this presence alive. In fact, his hip is broken, which is not a small thing for the ancient Near East, right? If you are about to potentially go into battle with an adversary like your brother, to have a broken hip means you can no longer run away if things get sticky, right? It means that journey back home becomes a lot more complicated that God has promised you. Everything is a whole lot less clear than it was before the wrestling match. But this is where Jacob is. And something about this interaction with God changes Jacob, and it changes the story because Jacob moves to the front of his camp, right? And he meets his brother there. Something about his wrestling with God makes him ready for reconciliation. Something about being tangled up and twisted in the most uncomfortable kinds of ways makes Jacob prepared to be the blessing to Esau that he was always meant to be, because it was never actually supposed to be about just Jacob. It's supposed to be about Jacob and Esau. It's about the blessing and the promise of God going out into all of creation, right? Yeah. So that's the Jacob story. And I think when we look at Jacob's life, there are moments where the presence of God is really obvious, where he says, surely the presence of the Lord is in this place. And it doesn't feel bad or scary. It's just good. I mean, he's a little afraid, but it's good. And we see that in our own lives too. I think this is a very cliche Bible verse. Like, you see it on t-shirts and like stuff a lot. Like, people will say, surely the presence of the Lord is in this place. My football team won, you know? Surely the presence of the Lord is in this place. Like, the weather was good and the vibes were high at the lake this weekend. Like, it was like a good time. The presence of the Lord is in this place. We can overuse it to a certain extent and just tack it on to everything that we like. But it's a cliche for a reason. Because as we walked with God over and over and over again, because I have known your stories for a long time, a lot of you, and I've had the privilege of walking with the people of God for a couple of decades now. And as we walk, there's all these moments where we look back and we say, surely the presence of the Lord was in this place. And he did an unexplained and miraculous thing. I have stories in my own life like that. There was a year we were taking foster care placements, and we had decided to take foster care placements, and then the first call we got, our water main broke, and we could not take the call. Like, we didn't have running water. The second placement we had my daughter had strep throat, and we couldn't take it. We were only licensed for one bed anyway. The fourth placement call, we had found out we were pregnant. We were expecting, sort of unexpectedly. The third placement, though, was for, like, a little boy who's now my son, right? Like, for the kid that God was bringing into our lives. There's these very obvious, miraculous moments where God uses something like strep throat to move and show you his purpose and his presence in your world. All the while, we're on our own journeys like Jacob, trying to build our own legacy, trying to do things our own way, trying to strategize and manipulate our lives in such a way that makes sense for us and brings us safety, and God is doing something different. And it's great when it's really obvious like that. And sometimes it's really not obvious, right? Like, sometimes we don't see it for years and years and years, and sometimes we're still waiting to see it. I was reflecting this week on my time here at Mosaic, because when I came to Mosaic, I was on my own side quest journey, right? Like, I was going through at the time what people would probably consider a deconstruction journey of just sort of stepping back from church life, church involvement, what it meant to be a follower of Jesus. I just wasn't sure about, right? And I had my own strategy for how to get there. I was on the road, and then I had a friend who was like, just come with me for a few weeks, right? Like, just come with me. I need a friend. Just come to Mosaic with me. This was a new church I hadn't been to. I had not had very much interest in going to this church or any church for that matter. And so I started to come week in and week out on this sort of pit stop side quest to what I was intentionally trying to do, which was disentangle myself from the whole thing altogether. And nothing miraculous happened that day. I didn't see like a ladder come down from heaven. I didn't see the presence of the Lord in the camp, but I'll know later he was there, because week in and week out, through conversations and coffee and breakfasts and prayer meetings and really ordinary Sundays, God was beginning to tear open these things in my life that were broken and needed to yield in his presence, like Jacob, right? Like, and I didn't even know it. Sometimes God needs to sneak up on us, but there are these ways in which God was sort of shifting and moving me, and I wasn't even aware of the wrestling, but God was sneaking his presence into my life. And I can see that now. I can see the subtle way that God was in this place. And it doesn't always feel like a warm blanket. It doesn't always feel like an exciting story. And I know as a culture, we're really drawn to exciting stories of meeting God, of like dopamine hits, of these immediate payoff interactions with moments with God. And I've had those myself. But most of my life is about the steady and consistent presence of the Lord. Right? Most of my life is about this way in which God is in the everyday, in the ordinary. That's why gathering as a people matters so much, because we believe that where we gather, God is in this place. And there's all these ways where we have a choice to pursue, like our own way of building legacy, or where we can sort of submit to the legacy of the people of God. And I think that sounds really fun and that sounds really neat, because that those are two happy stories of God's presence. But the reality is that sometimes in our life, God's presence will feel like this wrestling. It will feel like this painful yielding that we did not intend to do. We will be blindsided by the presence of the Lord. And I have a lot of those stories too. We will feel the pain and the breaking of whatever self-reliance and ego that we have. When we encounter his presence, there's a risk to that yielding that has to take place, right? And that can feel really heavy. It can feel really scary. And I think the temptation is to not enter in. The temptation is to not wrestle, to not look for the presence, to say, well, I think I'm just going to stay with my strategy. I can hope for the best that God meant what he said when he said he promised to complete this thing, but I think I'm going to just hedge my bets and stay close in the camp, right? But that's not what we're invited to do. And the thing I take comfort in those moments of wrestling, is Jesus, right? Because Jesus knows this story really, really well. Jesus, as a reminder, is an Israelite. He is the fulfillment of the promise, right? So all of this is the backdrop to Jesus as he's moving around. The people that are interacting with Jesus, this is what they know. The story of Jacob, this is what they identify with in themselves. This is God incarnate. This is the fulfillment of the promise that Jacob never could have dreamed of. There were moments all throughout Jacob's life where really miraculous things happened, right? If you read the stories, they're honestly just kind of kooky. Like, it's like all these wild experiences he has. And then there are all these ways where Jacob still lives in the brokenness of this world. He still experiences conflict and difficulty and difficult relationships. And he never quite sees the fulfillment that God has promised in Jesus, obviously, because it's many, many, many years later. He never could have imagined something that great. He wanted to build a little place of worship for God. And something much bigger is happening, because when Jesus meets Nathanael and John, he tells them, what does he say? It's good. He says, you will see heaven open and the angels of God ascending and descending on the Son of Man. He tells Nathanael, who is his fellow Israelite, like, I am the presence, I am the promise, I am the connector. And even when Jesus dies, there's this curtain in the temple. And the curtain has these pictures of angels and cherubim sewn into its fabric. And it rips from top to bottom. It's the same motion of God moving down to us that he does with Abraham and with Jacob. God is moving towards the world. And in that moment that the curtain rips at Jesus' death, the presence isn't just contained at Bethel any longer. The presence is spilling out, like, into the world. It's so much bigger than anything Jacob could imagine when he was like, just get me home, you know? This is a much larger thing we're dealing with. And I think it matters that we serve a God who has wrestled in the dirt with us. I read a commentary this week that the author said, I can't remember which one it was, but the author said, the amazing thing is not that Jacob wrestles with God. the amazing thing is that God wrestles with Jacob. We serve a God who is willing to put on flesh, right? Jesus himself gets in the dirt with us. He becomes a person made of the dirt and rolls around with us, and he fights this wrestling with sin and with death, and he does what all of us can't do. And that's what we take comfort in, because God is not telling Jacob in this promise that he makes at Bethel, it will all be right one day. Like, that would have been a mercy and a beautiful thing, right? If he had just told Jacob, one day I will fulfill this promise to you, and one day it will go out to every generation. That's not where God leaves it. He says, I will be with you until I do this thing. Like, I will be with you until I complete it. And that's the God we serve, the God who is with us in the promise. And I feel like as Christians, we can swing one way or the other. We can be so focused on the here and now, and I'm about to sound real mosaic and just let it go, because it's the both and, because we can get so focused on this life here and the pain and the wrestling that we are experiencing, right? And I take a lot of comfort in the God who wrestles with us. I take a lot of comfort in knowing that God, despite my objections, will break in me what needs to yield, right? And despite my objections, will remain with me until the break of the day, and he will bless me. He will see it through, and he will not abandon me. I take a ton of comfort in that, and I get to take a ton of comfort in the not yet, right? Like, the idea that there is something much bigger happening that I cannot understand. There are all these ways that our world is a mess, just like Jacob's world. We're not different all these years later. We have a ton of sin within us. I have a ton of sin that I wrestle with every day within my own heart, and the power of the curse in some ways is still there. There are relational messes all around us in the world, so much so that we sometimes like take joy in like filling in like what the gossip is like on the internet about these people we don't even know. Like, everywhere we see all of this brokenness. There are wars and rumors of wars that we know more about than humans were ever really designed to know about. We see injustice and violence everywhere. And the promise that God will fulfill his work is not just for then, it is for now. It is the promise that he somehow in the mystery won't leave us in the midst of it, that he does intend to turn swords into plowshares, that he does intend to bring justice into this world, that he does intend to bless every nation through his promise. Like, this is the thing that God really does intend to do, and it changes the way we see our present struggle. It changes the way we see the moment we're living in and the wrestling we're experiencing, right? There's this moment where every week, you know, we sort of gather around the table, and it reminds me of the moment of the Transfiguration. Remember this story? Jesus with his three friends, his buddies, and he shows them who he is. And Peter immediately wants to make a temple, a tent. I don't know if this is like a thing people like to do back then, because Jacob does the same thing. Probably cultural, I'm sure. And like, but he's like, let's make a house of worship here. The presence is here. And Jesus has to correct him and say, no, no. The presence, this is not where we stop, right? There is a good thing breaking out all throughout creation. And that's the promise. But the promise is also that he won't leave us in the middle of it, that he cares very much. He has not promised us like a future that's great and a life that's terrible here. There's difficulty. There's suffering. There is complications in the yielding of the presence of God. It will mess all of your plans up, and I love my plans. But there's this promise that God is with us, right? There's this promise that he is near, and it changes the way we can experience grief and the pain and the violence and the terror of this world. We can wrestle with God. And this is a season where a lot of us can feel that wrestling. Things are not as they should be, right? And yet, all will be made right, and God is near. He will not leave us, and that's a hard thing to hold on to. I think about just there's so many ways in my own life where this is true. And I know there are so many ways in all of your lives where this is true. This is why we gather, because it's important to tell these stories. It's important to remind ourselves of these things. I can remember so many ways that God has proved his faithfulness to us over and over and over again through the presence. But the band can come up, and like, what we want to invite you guys into in this moment is a reflection that God is the God who breaks for us, right? That as much as we can feel broken and beaten up by our own sin and insecurities, the world around us, the very large global pain we can feel, God is a God who wrestles in the dirt with us, but he has overcome it. Jesus is the one who actually prevails, right? They call Jacob the one who prevails, but it's a marker of the promise to come. Jesus is the one who is going to prevail, and that's what we celebrate each and every Sunday, and that's what we stand witness to each and every Sunday, and that's what we walk with each other day in and day out. We remind one another of the promise, and we experience the presence of God together. And it's okay if that doesn't feel like a warm blanket. It's okay if that feels very ordinary. This is a very ordinary sort of room and a very ordinary sort of Sunday. We are in just a warehouse downtown, right? But there's a way in which God is always on the move if we're willing to see it. And I love what Paul says in Philippians, because Paul, again, is an Israelite. And Paul says, he who began this work in you is faithful to complete it. Paul is promising that this promise is not just the promise of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, but that God is willing to stake his entire reputation on the thing through his son Jesus. And in us, this thing continues, and God will complete it. He will complete it in ways that we won't even know about until the other side of heaven, right? He will complete it generations from now in ways that we cannot see. But the challenge is to stay in the presence and to stay in the wrestling. So we're going to sing. You guys can come up. And we do communion. We got communion on either side. There's a gluten-free option right here. You can take the bread, dip it in the cup, worship as you feel led. Ask God what he'd have you do in these moments.